Here we are with Congressman Joe Courtney, Democrat of Connecticut's 2nd District. He's been in office. He's been around in Congress since 2007. Joe Courtney, do you ever wake up and say, oh, do I have to go again?
Yes. The two-year cycle, you know, is relentless. And, you know, frankly, I know we talked in the prior show about the census. I mean, one thing that also, you know, was reported is that the size of House districts is going to continue to grow to, you know, really levels that, in my opinion, the founders really never sort of contemplated for, you know, the House. So, I mean, right now, the average House seat is going to be about 760,000 people.
Wow.
And you know, we have not changed the size of the House since 1920, when, you know, I mean, it was a fraction of that. It was probably like a quarter or a third of that at the time. And, you know, I know a lot of people would kind of just blanch at the thought of having a larger House of Representatives. But frankly, it's the longest period of time that this country's gone without increasing the House of Representatives to correspond at least somewhat to the increase in population. It frankly distorts the Electoral College, because, as you know, that consists of the number of House seats and Senate seats, and frankly, it's to the disadvantage of more densely populated states like New York and Connecticut and, you know, places like that. I mean, if you run the numbers, if we expanded the size of the House, frankly, it would change the Electoral College map, as well as, in my opinion, connect House members a little closer to their districts. But again, I'm not holding my breath for that reform to take place anytime soon. But frankly, it's an elegant way to, in my opinion, you know, fix some of the distortions that we have right now in our system.
Governor Cuomo of New York is always yelling about carrying on about the deduction of state and local taxes. A lot of people in Connecticut would like to do that, would like to go back to that. What's your look at this?
So, when we did the Trump tax bill, you know, that was a real sore point. It's one of the reasons why, you know, many of us in the coastal areas of the country didn't vote for it. I mean, there were Republican members, as you will recall, who voted no on the Trump tax bill. I think Mr. Zeldin from Long Island was one for precisely that reason. And, you know, going back to the beginning of the income tax, the federal income tax, the deduction of state and local taxes was a given. It just, you know, and capping it at an arbitrary number that does not reflect, you know, living costs was really, there was obviously a lot of talk that it was a political target as much as a, you know, economic or public policy argument. So, you know, and what it does is, it, in my opinion, and, you know, Cuomo and Ned Lamont and other governors have pointed this out, is it just, it weakens the tax base, the state tax base and local tax base for funding things like schools and highways and police departments and et cetera. So, you know, there's going to be a push, and I am certainly joined with my colleagues in the region in terms of providing relief for that. Whether it makes it into the infrastructure bill, you know, is something that, you know, the speaker has indicated that, you know, she's certainly open to it. I mean, San Francisco, who's, you know, home prices and property values are, you know, make Connecticut pale. You know, I'm sure her constituents feel it as well. So, you know, this is a big bill, and there's, I think, opportunities for a lot of ideas to make their way into it, even after it gets, you know, the first cut on the legislation gets presented to Congress.
How do you feel about, you know, the whole concept of charging millionaires and billionaires more money on their taxes?
Well, again, the Trump tax bill cutting the top marginal rate from 39% to 36% was an outrage. I mean, there was just no justification for that. I mean, frankly, President Trump, when he was a candidate, Trump promised that his tax reform would not benefit people like himself. And obviously, that cutting that top marginal rate, I mean, just stuffed huge amounts of money in people's, like him, in their pockets. And
he lied. He lied for a
Well,
change.
you know, he certainly didn't, you know, keep that promise. And so anyway, I mean, we're I think that, you know, I was part of the Congress that put it at 39% after Bush had cut it, you know, before, as you will recall. And it had a very beneficial effect in terms of the country's public finances, and it did not hurt the economy. You know, as far as raising rates on capital gains, again, I think that the justification for a lower tax rate for passive income versus people who are, you know, punching a time clock, or, you know, down at the shipyard in Groton, or, you know, working in a store or whatever, I mean, to have them charged a higher marginal rate than people who are clipping coupons, I mean, you know, I know that kind of may sound like cheap populism, but the fact is that the economic argument for that, I think, is really weak. And so I think the president, who campaigned on the promise of equalizing those rates, you know, he's keeping his promise, and I certainly support it. There's clearly, there might be an argument for long-term capital gains versus short-term capital gains, you know, getting maybe some differential. Again, the long-term, you know, that may be more, somewhat more justifiable, that, you know, these are people who are investing for the long haul, and that's a good thing. But the short-term capital gains, the people who are, you know, running money in and out of investments and equities, and just, you know, I mean, there's no, if anything, it's just churning the economy. It's not growing the economy.
Joe Corley, let me ask you a combined question that I had noted down here. How's the Congress doing, in your opinion, about combating climate change? And also, specifically, I know that, you know, there's a plan for offshore wind in eastern Connecticut. Can you handle those two for me, please?
Sure. First of all, Biden's been doing great. You know, his putting Gina McCarthy in the saddle again, who hails, you know, from New England, and is just, in my opinion, one of the most competent people I've ever run into in government. And, you know, she's already, you know, pulling all the levers in the executive branch to accelerate renewable energy. Again, offshore wind under the Trump administration had been basically stopped in its tracks, which, you know, was completely inexcusable and totally at the behest of the fossil fuel industry. And, you know, we've had pending applications to build wind towers on the East Coast, which are now finally getting, you know, accelerated. And in New London, which I represent, you know, Ørsted, which is the largest wind power, offshore wind power producer in the world from Denmark, has already partnering with the state of Connecticut to build an assembly facility on the state pier in New London. It's going to transform that pier, which is old and decrepit, into a modern facility, and they're going to have good jobs there in terms of building trades for the build-out and also for the wind tower assembly. And they'll be barging it out, you know, in the New England region. But also, we've got some great companies that do undersea, you know, technology, a lot of ex-submariners and Navy folks who are going to basically have these UUVs, undersea vehicles that will basically, you know, be out there monitoring the cable lines to make sure that they're operating safely, keeping an eye out for marine mammals to make sure that, you know, whales that, you know, obviously traverse the Atlantic are protected. Really cool stuff. And they're, I mean, this is not just for the New England region. They're going to be, you know, in high demand for the whole country. And Thayer Mahan is the name of the company. It's a former three-star admiral who is head of the submarine force and has been developing these brilliant unmanned gadgets. And that's going to be that's the kind of innovation and technology that investing in renewables is going to bring. And if you look at the projections that Secretary Granholm, the Secretary of the Energy, is projecting for offshore wind, I mean, it is going to be the workhorse of hitting the climate change targets that Biden has set up. Again, Congress has more to do, and hopefully in the infrastructure bill, you know, the green technology focus in terms of electrification of our car fleets, is going to be a big piece of that plan in terms of reducing carbon emissions. Again, for our area of the country, this is huge. I mean, let's face it, you're never going to drill for oil or mine coal in New York State or Connecticut, but, you know, we have the capacity to do solar. We have the capacity to do wind and geothermal. And so rather than being the last mile of fossil fuel, system that always costs the most for the last mile, we're going to be the first mile. I think it's just really exciting.
First indeed, and Joe Courtney, I want to thank you as always. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show and explain what's going on in the United States Congress. We all appreciate it here at WAMC, and thank you so much for doing it.
Okay, thank you. I really enjoy your show. Take care.